Marcus Agrippa, The Perusian War, Part 2. Now, when we left off, Octavian was besieging Perugia, and in 41 BCE, reinforcements from Gaul are arriving to help out Antony's family. Well, Octavian's scouts spotted them as they approached Perusia, and he and Agrippa moved to block their progress. The appearance of Caesar's deputies surprised the commanders from Gaul, who decided to avoid a head-on clash and headed off to various neighboring cities. Placus went to Spoletum, Pollio to Ravenna, and Ventidius to Ariminum. Octavian placed detachments in front of each city to prevent them from escaping and returned to Perugia. Once there, he ordered the ditch deepened and widened to 30 feet in either dimension, raised the heights of the parapet, and erected 1,500 watchtowers along the whole line, spaced 60 feet apart. Tactically sited redoubts and emplacements provided protection for his men from which to launch attacks with artillery. As they expanded the fortifications, many died in the fierce hand-to-hand fighting with Lucius's gladiators, who made sorties from the besieged city. When completed, Octavian could wait and let the gnawing feeling of hunger take its effect. January the 31st, Lucius tried to break out of the city with a unit of troops. Octavian was waiting for him. His soldiers, who included men of the Praetorian cohorts, forcibly drove Lucius back. His allies now decided to assemble at Perugia to overwhelm Octavian's siege. His deputies learned of their approach and stationed greater numbers of troops on the road to keep them away. They successfully diverted them. There, Agrippa then besieged them in the area of Fagina or Fagulium. Pollio and Ventidius lighted fires as signals to Lucius. Ventidius and Asinius, which is Pollio, were of the opinion that they should go forward and fight, but Plancus said that they were between Octavius and Agrippa, and they had best await events. The opinion of Plancus prevailed. Those in Perugia rejoiced when they saw the fires, but when Ventidius delayed his arrival, they conjectured that he too was in difficulties, and when the fires ceased, they thought he'd been destroyed. Holding them up in Virginia served another purpose. Lucius was denied their assistance in Perugia, against which Octavian continued to apply pressure. The situation inside the city was absolutely dreadful. There, Lucius took an account of the remaining food and forbade distributing it to any of the slaves and prevented the slaves from escaping in case the enemy should gain better knowledge of his desperate situation. The slaves then wandered about in crowds, threw themselves upon the ground in the city and between the city and their forts, ate grass, green leaves, whatever they could find. Those who died, Lucius buried in long trenches, fearing that if he burned them, the enemy would discover what was taking place. Lucius' men pleaded with him to lead them in an organized breakout, ordering his men to equip themselves with iron tools, ladders, and wicker baskets. He attempted several times to attack Octavian's defenses by filling in the ditches and tearing at the parapets, but the walls held around the city. Coming at different sections of the circuit walls, the attack stretched Octavian's resources, but they held under pressure. Despite gallant and determined fighting, Lucius eventually sounded the retreat. Seeing the men withdraw, Octavian's men beat their swords against their shields, leading many of Lucius's men to swing around and make a renewed attempt to scale the parapet, which once again failed. During the last days of February, Lucius finally realized the hopelessness of his situation. He was trapped, running out of supplies, and relief was not coming. He sent a message to Octavian asking for terms, general pardon for his men who had originally come from Caesar's side. The reply came that he would only allow the veterans a pardon, but not the young recruits. Lucius surrendered. Octavian's troops cheered their leader and acclaimed him Imperator. As the defeated men emerged out of the city, Octavian's own troops cheered as they welcomed back old comrades. Octavian was touched by the scene and extended his pardon to all of the men. He was not in such a generous mood to the city fathers, who had caused the rebellion, and for their crime, they were executed. The inhabitants were required to abandon their town and watch as Octavian's soldiers entered and pillaged it. Meanwhile, a fire broke out, and the entire city was consumed in flames. Defeated Lucius Antoninus' deputies fled to Brundisium, to Ravenna, to Tarentum, to meet up with Enarobarbus and Mercius. Between them, Lucius's allies still had 13 legions and almost 6,500 cavalry. Agrippa went after Plancus. He intercepted him and his two legions 32 miles northwest of Sugenia. Rather than resort to the sword, instead he tried diplomacy to persuade them to desert their commander and join Octavian's side. He was successful, adding almost 12,000 men to Octavian's cause without bloodshed. Indeed, Agrippa was the only one of Octavian's generals that was able to convince an enemy to defect without having to fight to achieve it. Plancus himself slipped away to the coast. With their rebellion broken, Fulvia with her children fled to Brundisium with 3,000 cavalry and Plancus aboard 5 ships. They headed off for Macedonia. Pollio, however, was still at large and could yet pose a threat to the Caesarians. Meanwhile, Octavian rode the Gallia Transalpina. Defecting to him, Fucius Cellenius, son of the governor of Gallia Narbonensis, robbed Antoninus of 11 legions who were now sworn to support Octavian. To ensure their loyalty, he replaced all senior officers of these units with his own men under the command of Salvinius, who was based on the Rhone River. Octavian returned to Rome with Agrippa. For his service and initiative, Agrippa was rewarded with the post of Praetor Urbanus, which he assumed on March 40 BCE. This was an ancient magistracy stretching back to the age of the kings of Rome and was ranked first of the 16 praetors under the Republic. The office was responsible for the administration of justice in the city. At the age of 24, he was well below the legal age required to take the position, but it is an indication of Octavian's growing power that he could install his man with complete disregard for the rules and of his confidence in Agrippa to do the job. Early in July, Agrippa supervised the staging of the Ludi Apollinaires, which were the responsibility of the Praetor Urbanus. These games had been established as a regular fixture in the Roman calendar since 211 or 210 BCE and were based on religious observance. They honored Apollo in accordance with the oracles of Marsyas, which had predicted the military disaster at Cannae. Rather than gladiatorial blood games, as sponsor, Agrippa was required to put on a ceremonial parade, horse races, as well as stage performances, including a type of tragic drama which took Roman historical figures as the subject matter. They were also referred to as Ludi Circensis because they were held in the Circus Maximus during public holidays held between the 6th and the 13th of July. The historian Dio records that Agrippa prided himself upon his production of the game called Troy, which was performed by the boys of the nobility. Through the games, Agrippa discovered he had an interest for producing large-scale public spectacles. To pay for the games, Agrippa would have received some money from the state treasury, but probably had to supplement the budget with his own funds, no doubt enhanced by additional contributions from his rich friend. Dio also makes a curious remark that Agrippa was giving himself airs in various other ways on the strength of his being an intimate friend of Octavian. With the sudden surge of fame and power growing in Agrippa's head? If true, perhaps the reason for it was that before Octavian left Gaul, he delegated the entire defense of Italy to Agrippa. It must have been intoxicating to the young man more used to relative anonymity. Dio then suggests taking advantage of that fact that Agrippa's focus was on the Ludi Circensis, Sextus crossed into southern Italy, causing havoc wherever he went. Learning of the raids, Agrippa instinctively knew what to do. He quickly mobilized his troops and set off to deal with the problem. Agrippa soon chased Pompeius away. As a precaution, he left a garrison at certain points and sailed back again, then returned to his praetorian duties in Rome. But we do have a treaty that will be coming up known as the Treaty of Brundisium. I would also point out that this idea that Agrippa very much liked theater is easily found in various ancient cities. If you go to Athens and go to the main agora in Athens, Agrippa had a gigantic odeon constructed there, which is a facility for holding plays and all sorts of different entertainments, as well as, if necessary, governmental events. But there's not a whole lot left of it, but there's some of the major statues. So now the sources for this, The Lives of the Caesars by Suetonius, The Annals of Imperial Rome by Tacitus, The 12 Caesars by Grant, Marcus Agrippa, Right-Hand Man of Caesar Augustus by Powell, The Caesar's Wives Above Suspicion by Peron. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.